Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're playing with RotoViz Best Ball Tools on RotoViz Radio.
What's up, RotoViz?
Welcome into the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. I'm Dave Cabin, one of the owners here at RotoViz. Curtis could not be here as we record on Thursday evening, so this will be a podcast that I am doing solo, but that is fine. I'm feeling good about it because I have spent today playing with the new Underdog Best Ball Tools that recently published on the website, gearing up for the hundreds upon hundreds of drafts that I plan on doing between now in the start of the season. I would like to get, it's going to be at least 300. I'm targeting maybe around like 400. Now I have a strategy, for not necessarily making every single pick. And this isn't like my way of doing this without needing to make the picks doesn't require anything advanced. It just requires like going in and occasionally playing around with your pre-populated rankings so that you get your different exposures that you want to players. And I will explain this in the future. But today I was really just kind of reviewing how things shook out last year, looking at some stack information, looking at some roster construction based things. And I wanted to share some of those findings. So let's just start taking a look. One of the questions that you get asked very commonly when you meet people and people learn that you have some background in fantasy sports, you very often get the question of what's the best spot to pick from? And it really depends on the year, but every year I will get this question a couple of times. And we can retrospectively now go back and look at what that would have been last year by looking in this positional heat map tab that we have in the Underdog Advance Rate Explorer. Now, why is this tool called the Advance Rate Explorer? It's because with the way Underdog tournaments work, you advance round by round. So we're looking at how teams advance and what allows them to go from round to round to round. Last year, the best spots to be drafting from actually were Team 9 through Team 12, with the strongest performances being Teams 11 and Team 12. A fun thing that you can do here is you can retroactively go back and you can look at the ADP and you'll see why. There was a collection of about six or so players that were going around the 12 spot. Devonta Adams had an ADP of 11.1, Diggs 11.1, Cam Akers 11.1, Jonathan Taylor 11.8, and Austin Eckler at 12. So I think what you're seeing reflected by this is a lot of teams got Jonathan Taylor in with a pick there, or if they didn't, they got a player like Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, or Austin Ekeler, perhaps, players that did not flame out in the fashion that you would have seen for somebody like Christian McCaffrey, who only had 10.4% of his teams reaching the playoffs. You know, whereas you had like Davante Adams, 21.6% of his teams, 43% of teams with JT, 29.4 with Ekeler. And then even like, so Travis Kelce, only 13% of his teams hit the playoffs. Zeke Elliott, who actually went ahead of him with an ADP of 6.3, just 13% of his teams. Derrick Henry, who had an ADP of 3.9, 14% of his teams hit the playoffs. We do see that team three had around 17%. So it's probably due to some of the Henry or some of those teams having Derrick Henry. So that's an interesting exercise. Who are the players that we need to avoid this year? We don't know that yet. I don't really have a prediction or a proclivity for any particular spot this year. I think that ADP is still settling out, but it's pretty interesting to look at these numbers. Now, the other thing you can do in this positional heat map here is you can look at really specific things. So you can look in a grid that's going to show teams horizontally, draft round vertically, when a team selected their first wide receiver, and you can look at their advance rate in the playoffs. And I'm not going to go over the results of these because you really just have to look at this visually. It'd be very hard for me to convey these results on a podcast, but it's definitely something worth checking out. If you subscribe to the site and you haven't looked at it and you haven't looked at this yet, it's really cool. You could get lost in this for a long time. So you definitely want to go and check that out. I can't even really do it justice by trying to explain it, but it is very cool and very much worth a visit. Another cool thing that we have built in here is something that looks at upside stacks and safest stacks. And you can kind of see a variety of configurations here of how you could put your teams together by looking at the position on the team that you're stacking, for example, like a QB1, RB2, and the wide receiver 3. Or just to make it really simple, if you were looking at the Chiefs last year and you wanted to stack the quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end, QB1 would be Mahomes, wide receiver 1 would have been Tyreek Hill, and a tight end 1 would have been Travis Kelce. I'm pretty sure everybody listening is familiar with the concept of a stack. But just in case you're not, in DFS and best ball or really in any type of league, when we're talking about a stack, it's getting multiple players that play on the same NFL team and putting them together. Now, last year, the stack that had the highest number of teams advancing to the finals, which we are calling the highest upside type of stack, had its teams QB1, RB2, and wide receiver 2. And that actually produced the best result by a decent margin. Now, the safest stack, we're looking at number of teams that made the playoffs, but you will see that it's pretty flat in that region. So there doesn't really appear to be a certain stack that's better at getting teams to the playoffs. And the thing, though, that you do need to keep in mind with some of these is there's going to be small samples. But in the case of the upside stacks, we actually have large enough samples that you can kind of draw a meaningful conclusion from last year. Doesn't mean that it's going to be predictive. We don't have the data going back far enough to start to understand things that might be sticky, meaning that they correlate year over year and they tend to happen repeatedly, and you're able to use them to better predict what might happen in the next year. We don't have enough information going back to look at that, but nonetheless, you know, you can start to, as you view these things and play around, get a better sense of different ways you could put your teams together. Now, there is also a really cool thing in here, which again, doesn't make for good radio or good podcasting, but you should check out. There's a Stack Explorer where you can come up with different types of stacks and look at the scoring distributions of teams that employed those stacks last year. So that's kind of some quick hitters on the Underdog Advance Rate Explorer, which is pretty cool. I also want to pop into the Underdog Best Ball Roster Construction Explorer here. I'm going to pick some low-hanging fruit. I'm going to save some of the real juicy nuggets. I can't believe that I just said that phrase. But I did. I'm going to leave some of those juicy, hot-takey nuggets for the articles. But very common question that you're going to get when you start talking about best ball and in any particular format that you're in is how many players you want to play at each position. And one of the key focuses now an underdog, you don't have DST and you have kickers. So you just have quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. Those are the spots that you're going to have on your team, or those are the type of players that you're going to be drafting on to your team. So no surprise, you're going to want to draft more running backs and wide receivers than quarterbacks and tight ends. But the question generally is, do you draft two tight ends or three tight ends? And there's an interesting kind of flip here. You can see that last year, 18% of teams that drafted three tight ends made the playoffs. And actually, four tight ends was better than two tight ends. You did not want to go for five or one. Those had very weak rates. But in terms of actually making it to the finals, the teams that had two tight ends had the highest percentage. And actually, teams that had one tight end had the highest percentage. But this really shouldn't be surprising. Now, there's very few teams that probably fit into that one tight end configuration. But the reason that I think we're seeing higher numbers for those finals teams is because they just happened to pick that right tight end, right? So if we go back and we look at the summary table in the Underdog Advance Rate Explorer, and we just look at tight ends, we're going to see that those teams probably went with Mark Andrews, those one or two tight end teams. They managed to stack things right. Or maybe they went like Mark Andrews and like Harrison Bryant, actually, his teams in the finals did pretty well. So there's some luck there, especially because with the way that these tournaments work, you're going to be winning them based upon 1 week. The start of the season gets you into the playoffs, but then you're going on a weekly basis from there. So there's going to be some noise, in my opinion, when you start looking and drawing conclusions off of how teams got to the finals.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Personally, when I'm thinking about my teams this year and the way that I'm going to build them, I am going to have things distributed so that more of my teams are making it to the playoffs than just trying to structure it on the things that seemed to work last year to get into the finals, because I don't think that there's enough information to draw any solid conclusions, at least for underdog, based upon what we saw last year. But it's interesting to see that four actually, from a making playoff perspective, outperformed two. Now, on the quarterback front, let me quickly pop over to that. There is a very definitive winner. And this is something we've talked about before. It's two quarterbacks, by and large. So if you are playing underdog, you're going to want to have the overwhelming majority of your teams with two quarterbacks. The reason for this, I think, comes down to a couple of things. One, it's hard to find there's only so many quarterbacks that on a weekly basis are going to be contributing to any teams, because of the way that quarterback scoring works, and the number of quarterbacks that get used each week, right? Whereas like tight ends, you could have guys that are outside of the top, even guys that aren't starters on their team occasionally having a week where they're putting up a lot of points. That doesn't really happen with quarterback. So you're kind of almost capped with just about two quarterbacks per team that are going to be useful. I guess you could have three, but I think it's probably intuitive, so we don't need to explore that anymore. So you definitely want to have two quarterbacks on the majority of your teams. Now, the other thing that you can look at in these tools is when you are selecting your wide receiver two or your QB two or your, you know, tight end one, when should you be doing those, or when should you be making those selections? So I have talked last season about how one of the things that I had noticed was that having strong quarterbacks, or the teams that I had that were performing well and were advancing, had good quarterbacks. So one thing I was curious about was looking at if that actually did seem to manifest in the percentage of teams that made the playoffs. And you actually do see this. One really interesting thing is among teams that took their QB2 before round eight. So that means you'd be selecting two quarterbacks in your first seven picks. Among teams that did that and then did not draft any more quarterbacks, 19.5% of those teams made the playoffs, and actually 0.16%, which is a pretty high number, made the finals. And then from playing around with the tool more there, I actually can tell you that you do see a decline as you start to push that QB2 selection back. Now, it kind of flatlines in the middle rounds. But yeah, that's a super interesting result. Now, one of the other things that I wanted to look at here was percentage of teams making the playoffs that took their RB2 before round five. So having their, in rounds one through four, selecting two running backs. The best playoff percentage came from teams that did that. The highest percentage for the playoffs, those teams then took five running backs. That's at 17.5. But if we look at running back two selected after round five, you see the rates start getting better and actually jump up to around 20% if you take eight running backs. But if we push running back two after round 8, so when you're definitely out of that running back dead zone, that's when you start to see the rates get up into the 22% with 7 or 8 backs, which is a cool result because it speaks to this running back dead zone that we've talked a lot at the site about. And this is something that's been intuitive for a number of years. One exercise that I used to do at the end of every offseason was just kind of explore ADP within each position and where you started to see big fall offs in scoring. And what we did see pretty much year over year was you reached a certain point, generally around like round 3, where the running backs being selected just weren't having a very large return. This stemmed from the fact that there generally are a couple of running backs at the top of the boards that are going to put up a ton of points, not many others that are going to be able to equate to that, and that it's hard to pick those guys in each year, especially because what we find sometimes is that those big scorers come much later in the draft. So you're again just kind of seeing this concept reflected. So one of the cool things about these tools is assumptions, intuitions, takeaways that you've had from prior seasons, you can get that data that's going to back them up. What were some other things I saw that I thought were worth noting? Let me look at my notes here. Oh, yeah. I was looking at if you can wait on wide receiver. And the answer is you really can't. So like teams that took their wide receiver 2 after round 8, the highest percentage of playoff making teams then took 7 wide receiver, took 10 wide receivers. And even at that, it was only at 15.1%. If you push back to like your wide receiver 2, actually it's not even worth looking at that. Let's look though, even wide receiver 2 after round 6, your highest win rate is around 14%. So waiting on wide receiver, not going strong at the position on underdog is a proposition that really did not work out last year. Bad win rates, even if you're looking after round 5, even if we use after round 3, you have to get down to around round 3 to start getting into the 17% type of range. So there's not a lot of validity for waiting for your wide receiver 2. So if you were to try to pick one of those structural little approaches where you're kind of punting and waiting on a position, we do see the confirmation that running back is the position that you would want to wait on out of wide receiver and running back. But we did talk some about quarterback and tight end, so we probably should go back now and see how far you could wait. We might have already addressed this with quarterback, but let's quickly pop back in and take a look at that. So without going through all of the different pieces, I can tell you that at least last year, you did really not want to creep much past round 8 without having your first quarterback selected. Given that this information is now out there, you're definitely not going to be able to do that in 2022 because we're going to see the ADP of quarterbacks remaining pretty strong in these tournaments. So I think that's a key takeaway. But if we pivot over to tight end, and for example, we look at drafting your tight end 1 after, let me just set this up here. So like taking your tight end 1 after round 14, for example, we actually do see that if you take 3 tight ends and your first tight end comes after round 14, you can get into a 20% playoff rate, which is pretty darn strong. Even if we push that back to going after round 15, you're still at 18% for teams with 3 tight ends. So you definitely can start to take that approach. Looking at tight end, if we kind of flip this on its head and we do tight end 2 before, let's say, round 12, do we see aggressive win rates? No, those win rates that were, I shouldn't say win rates, playoff rates are lower. Tight end 2 before round 12, even with 14, you're at 15. Even with 2, you're at 14.5. If I move this to round 14, you do see teams with 3 tight ends getting up into the 17% range. But my takeaway there is that a nice way to kind of structure your team is prioritizing quarterback and wide receiver over running back and tight end. Now, we're really just scratching the surface here of what you can dig into when you start looking at these tools. But I think I think that these numbers are interesting. It helps to put some of the context around how last year impacted different things that we saw. But I also think that these takeaways are not only applicable to underdog in specific or to best ball leagues in specific. I think some of these things do help us shape our opinion of the things that are going to be important in redraft leagues, to some extent dynasty leagues. But, you know, I've been saying it, and Sean has been noticing it, Curtis has been noticing it. The last couple of seasons, it is starting to be more important to have those high-level quarterbacks. And I hate to beat a dead horse here, but now you're really seeing it in the data. And that's something that we were noticing in redraft leagues. So again, I'm bringing that up just to talk about the applicability of some of the lessons that you can learn from looking at best ball leagues and then applying them into redraft leagues. So just kind of a quick hitter episode here with some, in my opinion, pretty interesting takeaways from last year. But again, if you subscribe to RotoViz, which you definitely should be, definitely pop in there, play around with those tools. Even if you're not a best ball player, it's just some really, really interesting stuff there. Curtis and I had been planning on drafting an underdog team and then kind of recording an episode after we were maybe 8 rounds in, kind of talk about some of the decision points that we made, players that we thought about. We thought it might be a fun way to work in some more player specific analysis, just kind of talk about them as we made our selections. We're still planning on doing that next week, so that will be one of the episodes. As always, thanks for hanging out with us this week. Have a great weekend. And I don't ask you for much. We don't ask you for much, but it's on the top of my mind right now. If you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review, it would be greatly, greatly appreciated. Take like 5-7 minutes this weekend. Maybe you don't even need that long and do that, please. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.